It was only one of the various bundles Gale had secreted around the tramp trader. She stuffed the crisp plastic notes into a rear pocket, then, on impulse, picked up a match before she went out on deck. The Coogan had already pulled up next to the jetty, and Len Buchanan was busy tying one of the cables to a bollard. Gale's face had turned a thunderous purple below her coolie hat. She took in Marie's appearance with one flabbergasted look. "What the hell do you think you're doing dressed like that, you little strumpet? You've got to give Lenny a hand loading the meat. My poor Lenny can't shift all those heavy carcasses by himself. And where the hell do you think you're going with that bag? And what have you got in it?" Marie smiled her lazy smile, the one her father always called intolerably indolent. She struck the match on the cabin wall. Both of them watched the phosphorus tip splutter into life, the yellow flame biting into the splinter of wood, eating its way along towards her fingers. Gale's mouth dropped open as realization dawned. "Goodbye," she said brightly. "It's been so nice knowing you." She dropped the match into the sewing box at Gale's feet. Gale screeched in panic as the match disappeared under her scraps of cotton and lace. Bright orange flames licked upwards. Marie marched off down the jetty. Len was standing by the bollard ahead of her, a length of silicone fiber rope coiled in his hands. "You're leaving," he said. Gale was shouting a tirade of obscenities and threats after her. There was a loud splash as the precious sewing box hit the water. Marie couldn't manage the blasé expression she wanted, not in front of him. There was a curious look of dismay on the skinny old man's face. "Don't go," he said. It was a plea. She'd never heard his voice so whiny before. "Why, was there something you didn't have? Something you forgot to try out?" Her voice came close to breaking. "I'll get rid of her," she said desperately. "For me? You're beautiful, Marie." "Is that it? All you've got to say to me?" "Yes. I thought I never hurt you, never once." "And you wanted to go on? Is that what you want, Len? The two of us sailing up and down the Julie for the rest of our days?" "Please, Marie, I hate her. I want you, not her." She stood 10 centimeters away from him, smelling the fruit he'd eaten that morning on his breath. "Is that so? I have money. You would live like a princess, I promise. Money is nothing. I would have to be loved. I could give everything of myself to a man who loved me. Do you love me, Len? Do you really love me?" "I do, Marie. God, I do. Please, come with me." She ran a finger along his chin. Tears were welling up in his eyes. "Then kill yourself, Len," she whispered thickly. "For she is all you have. She is all you'll ever have. For the rest of your life, Len, you're going to live with the knowledge that I am always beyond you." She waited until his tragi-hopeful face crumpled in utter mortification, then laughed. It was so much more satisfactory than kneeing him in the balls. There was a wagon loaded with silage trundling along the main dirt track heading west. A 14-year-old boy in dungarees was driving it, giving occasional flicks on the big shire horse's reins. Marie stuck out her thumb, and he nodded eagerly, overawed eyes goggling at her. She clambered aboard while it was still moving. "How far to Durringham?" she asked. 50 kilometers, but I'm not going that far, just to Meppel." "That'll do for a start." She sat back on the hard wooden plank seat, the jolting wheels rocking her gently from side to side. The sun was boiling, the swaying was uncomfortable, the horse stank. She felt wonderful. The Gigantea was over 7,000 years old when Latton and his small band of followers arrived on Lalonde. It was set on a small rise in the land which pushed its 300-meter-plus length even further above the surrounding jungle. Storms had frayed and broken the tip, resulting in a bulbous knot of snarled twigs, with tufts of leaves sticking out at odd angles. Birds had turned this malformed pinnacle into a voluminous eyrie, pecking away at it over the centuries until it was riddled with a warren of holes. When it rained, water would clog in the Gigantea's thick, fuzzy leaves, their weight pushing the downward-sloping boughs even closer towards the fat bole. Then for hours afterwards, droplets would sprinkle down, drying the Gigantea out from the top, the boughs slowly rising again. Standing on the ground below was like standing under a small, powerful waterfall. The last traces of soil had been washed away from under the boughs several millennia ago. All that remained was a solid, undulating tangle of roots extending outwards for 100 meters, slimed like seaside rocks at low tide.